Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with me this morning. It is Friday, May 25th. Can you believe it? I want to start with a passage out of James chapter 1, verse 19. It says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." I think there's anger going on in our country, kind of nonstop. I saw that President Trump sent Kim Jong-un a letter telling him he won't be in Singapore for the meeting. I saw the letter. Can Kim Jong-un read English? I can't assemble the picnic table together using the French side of the instructions, so that might be a concern. All right, I found this interesting. I was doing a little bit of looking around, and it said that, do you know if you keep your cool when being criticized, you're more likely to have high self-esteem? But if you become aggressive and lash out when receiving criticism, you might be a narcissist. Let's be quick to listen. And did you also know that Adobe doesn't want you using Photoshop as a verb? According to the permissions section of their website, trademarks are not verbs. So instead of saying the image was Photoshopped, they prefer you say the image was enhanced using Adobe Photoshop software. I don't think that's going to happen. We do what we do because we do what we do. All right, we have a great show today. Carmen LeBurge is going to be with us in just a minute. Alex McFarland is also on the program today. And who doesn't love those two guests? I know I do. So let's take a short break and then connect with Carmen. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Glad you're with me. Seven minutes after the hour, as we look upon Memorial Weekend, make sure we treat that holiday with absolute respect and reverence for what it is. And then fire up the barbecue, have some laughs, have some good time. Apparently 42 million Americans are traveling this weekend, and gas is creeping up a little bit. So I think it's going to be hovering around that $3 a gallon, which we've been off the hook for quite a while on gas. It's been pretty reasonable for quite a while. So, and $3 is still pretty reasonable. So I drive a hybrid, so that's why I'm not as sticker shocked by the price of gas. But anyway, I have on our studio line Carmen LeBurge, the host of Connecting Faith and ReconnectWithCarmen.com. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning, Bill.
Are you sticking around over the weekend, or what are you doing?
Well, for the most part, we're sticking around. I need to visit an elderly friend in Indiana who deserves a visit from me, and I haven't seen in a while. But I have your does Kim Jong-un speak English? I have an answer to that question.
Does he?
Okay, so he actually attended an English language international school in Bern, Switzerland, under an assumed name back in the 90s. And so he certainly not only speaks but writes English.
Oh, wow. That is...
I'm here to help.
No kidding. You're so helpful. That's really good. I want to talk a little bit about some of the broken immigration. I know you've been discussing that off and on this week on Connecting Faith. And let's look at some of the costs, just from a practical standpoint. I think the average cost in welfare to cover an illegal immigrant household is almost $6,000.
Right. So the economic cost is certainly significant. I think that the social cost is also something that we've been talking about. So if you deport the parent who's here illegally, you immediately put the children who are American-born and have one American parent, you immediately put them into poverty. And so the families that we actually move into the welfare system because we deport individuals who are here illegally but who are the parents of American children – the economic impact of doing that, as well as the social impact, as well as, you know, as Christians, we actually don't think that families should be, you know, ripped apart. What I've learned this week, or one of the things I've learned this week, is that this is an incredibly complicated issue. And we can't reduce it down to one talking point, and we can't reduce it down to even the language of legal and illegal immigration, because even when you start talking about illegal immigration, the majority of people who are here as undocumented folks from around the world are actually now here because they overstayed a legal visa. Mm-hmm. They're not here, you know, they're not here because they came across our southern border. And so I think there are so many misconceptions and myths related to immigration.
Right.
And that's really what we're trying to unpack this week on Connecting Faith.
Right. Well, families are ripped apart all the time when mom or dad breaks the law and goes to prison here in the United States.
Absolutely. And so, which leads to a great conversation about the Prison Reform Act that that the House passed. It now still has to go before the Senate. But, you know, to say that we want more people incarcerated, or to say that we want, more children to grow up in a one-parent household because we have broken immigration laws, because we don't actually tell people when they come here, let's say on temporary protected status. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people from Central America who've now been here, some of them 20 years, under temporary protected status. We never defined the word temporary when they came. Mm-hmm. So whose fault is that? Is it your fault or the government's fault that when you came under temporary protected status, no one defined the term temporary? Well, that's the government's fault. And so I'm not saying that we don't need secure borders. We absolutely need to secure our borders. We need to figure out how to fix our broken immigration system, but punishing the people who are already here and are law abiding. And I think that's the other important thing to point out here. The percentage of people in the general population who commit felonious crimes in the United States is up over 6%. The percent of immigrants whose only crime is that they are not in the country legally, so they haven't committed another crime. But there's only 2% of the illegal immigrant population who commit, you know, felonious crimes or felonies. And so this perception that we have that this is a bunch of, you know, oh, I was going to use a biblical term, which I won't use, a bunch of folks who are just, you know, out there wildly breaking the law, it's nowhere near the percentage of lawlessness we have in the general population in the United States.
Mm-hmm. So, Carmen, if you are in another country and you're there, I'm speaking you personally, you go to, like, let's say you move to Saudi Arabia just for fun. That's what you want to do. Now you're over there illegally, and you're cool to go over there and start demanding all your rights?
So the way that I because they have better – the problem is our laws, right? We don't even have laws that are related to this that are particularly enforceable in any way that is sort of honest to who we are as Americans. So what I've likened it to this week, Bill, is missionaries. Like, we actually think as Christians that Christians should be allowed to go to places that are predominantly not Christian in order that the will of God might be advanced in spreading the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in order to do that, those missionaries are going to have to go, first of all, under some level of false pretense. They're going to have to get a work visa. They're going to have to get a student visa. They're going to have to get some sort of visitor visa. And then they're going to have to get that country under its immigration laws to continue extending those visas. Well, we don't extend those visas here in the United States. And so if you come on a student visa, we are much more quick to bring that student visa to an end. And in another country, you might be able to extend your student visa over and over and over again and actually remain as a missionary in what we would call a closed country in terms of Christianity. And so I do think that for Christians, there are some things that we need to sit around and think about and stew about and consider. And one of those, Bill, is for those of us who are pro-life, you know, we would actually say, look, God intended there to be 60 million more people in the United States of America right now. But we have murdered them through mm-hmm. abortion. And so let's not use the argument that there aren't enough resources. There aren't going to be enough schools. There aren't going to be enough jobs. We're the people who actually say America is 60 million people short because of abortion. And so if we're talking about 11 million people who are here by other means than birth, what is the possibility that God has sent some of them to replace the ones we've killed? Mm-hmm. Like, I think at some point we got to have bigger conversations than just I don't like that somebody has a different color skin and speaks a different language and wants something for their families that my ancestors wanted for our family, and we now have it because we're here by birth. Mm-hmm. I just think we got to have a bigger conversation.
Yeah. Is the immigration that's going on today the same kind of immigration that happened back in the 20s?
It's dramatically different. That's an excellent point. So when you look at, you look at the 1800s and you look at the mass migration from Western Europe in particular here to the United States, you're now looking at migration from different parts of the world. And that's part of this conversation. Part of this conversation is certainly racial and ethnic. But part of this conversation is also that, at that point, you could actually just come in at Ellis Island and say, I've arrived. And we'd give you paperwork, and we might change your name because we couldn't pronounce it. But but you could become an American citizen.
Right.
You just literally walk in, and there is no Ellis Island anymore. And so there are ways to legally immigrate to the United States. The challenge is if you're already here and you were brought here, let's say, as a child, this is the DACA conversation or the Dreamer conversation that's also a part of all of this. If you were brought here as a child – and so America is really the only home you've ever known. English is the only language you speak. You're still technically here undocumented. There's not a line for you to get in to actually become a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to leave and then get in the line in your country, whatever that is. And we don't actually accept immigrants from every country in the world. And so you very likely would never be able to come back to the United States, mm-hmm. let alone become a citizen. And these are people who've lived here. So we've got to find some solutions for the folks who are, at least some of the folks who are already here, even as we secure our borders in order that we can get a better handle on our own immigration laws and issues.
Carmen, so do we need to clarify our laws and enforce them, or what's the barking dog right now?
We really need comprehensive immigration reform. We're not getting that.
Okay.
We've now had multiple administrations, both Democrat and Republican, who have failed to do this. I think a huge part of it, Bill, is that no matter who's in power in Washington, the other party doesn't want to give the majority party a win on this, because this looks like the win both parties want, and they're less concerned about the good of the people that it affects. They seem to be more concerned about the politics.
All right, Carmen, after the break, we'll continue our conversation. Carmen LeBurge is my guest, host of Connecting Faith. At 17 minutes after the hour, we'll be back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. Carmen LeBurge is my guest, host of Connecting Faith, heard weekdays at noon Central Standard Time, and she's with me this morning. Carmen, I think the vote's underway right now in Ireland on the abortion referendum. Is it happening today?
It's happening today. We really would encourage people to be praying today for this vote in Ireland. They're actually taking this the fourth time since 1983 that the people of Ireland have voted on this Eighth Amendment to their constitution. And this referendum seeks to strike the Eighth Amendment from their constitution. And that Eighth Amendment actually recognizes the equal rights of an unborn baby to the rights of the woman carrying the baby. And so this would open the door for for abortion pretty much on demand in the nation of Ireland.
Mm. I'm always sad when I hear this kind of news, and Ireland has always been such a strong proponent of the life of the child, that I hate to see this shift going on in this country.
Well, and this is actually the first time that there's the very real possibility that the referendum may get more than 50% of the vote. It actually has not been particularly close in the past, but as Ireland, like most Western European nations and certainly North America, moves away from its sort of religious moorings. So, Ireland used to be an overwhelmingly Catholic nation, and therefore people with sincerely held beliefs related to Catholicism were very pro-life. We still have a lot of folks who are Irish who would identify as Roman Catholic, but like Nancy Pelosi, who identifies as Roman Catholic, they're also wildly pro-abortion, which for me is an inconsistency in thought. And so One of the things I've appreciated is the very high-profile pro-life people who have been speaking for the preborn. And so I actually think we've seen some of the best contemporary apologetics for life coming out of this debate in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Carmen, what's been breaking your heart lately?
Probably what's going on in the Southern Baptist Convention.
Okay.
For those who aren't aware, the Southern Baptist Convention is facing what I would describe as its own Me Too moment. So even today, as the secular press is going to be letting everybody know that Harvey Weinstein is going to formally be arrested and charged for the horrendous things that I think it's now all very well known. There's more than 80 women who have alleged Harvey Weinstein doing all kinds of wretched things. And some of the people who condemned him when that information began to come out, well, they now stand condemned by the testimony of women as well. And so there's a reckoning underway. If folks want to read Albert Mohler's piece on this particular note, I think it's helpful. But you're going to see really in the religious press, and by religion news writers in every secular outlet across the country as well, they're certainly going to be covering the Southern Baptist Convention. So the latest is Paige Patterson, who is the president of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, which is in Fort Worth, has been you can pick the word resigned or you can pick the word retired. He is no longer the president of that institution. Following allegations of teaching, in particular, related to domestic violence and a woman's not only right to leave that situation, but his responsibility to inform law enforcement that was happening. And so although he has not been formally charged with any particular, quote, wrongdoing, he has been relieved of his position as president of that institution. I think that you're going to see at the Southern Baptist Convention this summer, which, you know, it's the largest Protestant denomination in the country. So we're talking about a significant number of folks across the country who at least attend Southern Baptist churches, whether or not they consider themselves Southern Baptist. I think you're going to see a real conversation take place about accountability and about a prevailing do as I say, but not as I do issue. And I think it's the kind of reckoning that we all need, but it's incredibly painful.
Yeah. So that is, I appreciate you sharing that. That is a difficult one to navigate through, and it's something that we can be just at least praying for what's coming up at that convention and the future of our country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the future of evangelicalism. I mean, I think that's another part of this conversation. We certainly want churches to remain somehow connected with one another, because you at least have the possibility of a greater accountability if you are in a system together versus just a church that's standing out there on its own without any kind of connectionalism. But we also recognize that this is the kind of event that leads to individual congregations and pastors walking away and becoming, quote, independent churches, which in my view puts them at greater risk for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Carmen, do you think our default nowadays is just to feel polarized in society, that we take our stance and we dig in and we don't listen to each other as much as we should or ever?
I think what you're talking about, in my view, is the loss of the art of conversation.
Yes, maybe that's it.
Well said. I think we've all become, people who we're just trying to put our stuff out there, and then we're not actually listening to what the other person is saying, and we're, in many cases, not actually listening to what God has said on a particular subject, and therefore we're not inviting the Holy Spirit to bring our ideas or our thoughts into conformity with God's ideas and God's thoughts. And so not only do we entrench against each other, we actually harden our hearts to the will of God. And mm-hmm. that, in my view, is, that's worse. It's one thing for you and I to disagree about something. It's another thing for one of us to be totally unwilling to be conformed to God's will on a particular subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we seem to just carry on parallel monologues with each other. We're not really listening.
So, you know, let's encourage folks this Memorial Day weekend. You might be with people at all kinds of events. So what I'm encouraging folks, particularly like on Memorial Day or at Memorial Day observances, certainly we want to recognize and celebrate or honor the sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice that was made by so many for this country, for the freedoms we enjoy. I think it's incumbent upon Christians to bring God into that conversation by at least somehow, some way, finding an opportunity to acknowledge that the ultimate sacrifice for the freedom from sin, its penalty in death, but also its power in life, that ultimate sacrifice was also made by blood, and it's made by Jesus Christ. And so if you're in a cemetery this weekend, wandering around amidst the white headstones and the beautiful red, white, and blue flags, you know, I would just remind you to look at, be mindful of all of the crosses engraved on so many of those headstones, and that those folks laid down their life for their friends, not just in service to their country, but in service to the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Carmen, thanks so much. Have a great Memorial weekend, and God bless you and your family this weekend.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye. It's 28 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and go to little Ken Davis and lighten up. Minutes after the hour. Good morning. It's so nice that you're with me this morning. It's already Friday. Memorial weekend is in front of us. Can you believe June is around the corner? Lots going on. We're going to take a very short break for news. Alex McFarland, our good friend and apologist, author, and all-around great guy, is up next. He's in about 7 minutes.
Mom, Dad, what's your guideline for disciplining your children? It's so important you have one. This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. When it comes to your children, discipline firmly, but without exasperation, and certainly without physically harming them in any way. The Bible is clear. Don't provoke your children to anger and discouragement. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." And again in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21, "Do not aggravate your children, or they will become discouraged." Let me repeat, you break the will, but you never want to break the spirit of your child. When Proverbs 22:6 says, we're to train up a child, it means knowing the uniqueness of that particular child, knowing that child well and how they will respond. True discipline is always done in love. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with a Faith in Life Minute. If you feel like your family is too busy and needs to cut down on some activities, listen to this encouragement from Jill Savage, the founder of Hearts at Home.
We didn't want our kids to be involved in so many activities that A, it was stretching the pocketbook, but B, it was stretching us emotionally and relationally. So one of the first things we did is we really learned about the concept of margin. And margin is having enough white space in our life to really do the things that are most important to us. And the things that are most important to us are actually relationships. And so we started out by limiting everybody's activities, mom and dad included, to one activity outside the home. And there were lots of opportunities to do more than that. But we determined that with seven of us under one roof, one activity was going to be enough, and it was even going to push the margin priority that we had.
Learn more from Jill Savage at myfaithradio.com.
Together, we're growing in our faith.
I think that the piece that has just been standout to me is how, in line with current events, the programming, some of it is planned, I'm sure, weeks in advance, and it's just been exactly what God wanted us to have, I think, at the right time. So very blessed by it.
Connecting faith to life, together on Faith Radio.
Did you miss one of your favorite shows this week? Wish you could listen to that sermon again and again? Jump in the car partway through an interview that you wish you'd heard all of? Is there a show or an interview you heard that you would like to pass along to a friend? Download or share our free show podcasts at myfaithradio.com and listen anywhere, anytime. That's myfaithradio.com.
Thank you.
It's 22 minutes until the top of the hour. My guest on our studio line is Dr. Alex McFarland, author, apologist, all-around great guy, flat-picking guitarist. There's nothing he can't do. He's with me this morning. Hi, Alex.
Good morning. How are you, Bill?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. So I find it interesting. It seems like when the bottom line gets affected the most is when the most amount of effect happens. So let's talk a little bit, if you would, about the NFL policy now that says players need to be standing during the national anthem, and if they would prefer to just stay in the locker room, they can do that as well.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm old school, but I've always felt like it's appropriate to be grateful and to recognize, you know, how one's bread gets buttered. There used to be a plaque they would put in the back room of businesses. I used to see this a lot. When I was in college, I drove a delivery truck, and you would frequently see kind of this plaque on the wall that would say, if you work for this organization, don't criticize it, at least not on company time, because you're weakening the tendrils that bind you to the organization. And it was basically kind of a Andrew Carnegie pep talk thing, basically saying, if you can't in good conscience work here, then move on. But don't stay, draw the paycheck, derive the benefits, and yet grouse, complain, and undermine the morale of others. My way in relating that to the NFL is, look, if you want the gravy and you're going to be on the gravy train, then don't criticize that train.
Mm-hmm.
Support that train.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've said before, for all of the people that, they don't feel like in good conscience they can support the playing of the national anthem because they ostensibly don't like America. Hey, you know, don't take the multi-million-dollar paycheck. Average NFL player makes $5.2 million. Some make a little bit less. Some make $40, $50, $60
million. Mm-hmm.
And most of these are guys with a high school education. Pick any other country in America where with a high school education and 10 times more attitude than intellect, you can become a millionaire for playing a game.
Right. Let's start, Alex.
You can find that country, pal. Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
Go there.
Let's start at the origins of all this. Colin Kaepernick was the first, and he was really protesting the unjustified killings of unarmed black Americans by police officers. And his position was, I'm taking the advice of former Green Beret Nate Boyer, who said, soldiers take a knee in front of a fallen brother's grave, you know, to show respect. So was its origins in the beginning? Did it have some virtue?
Well, you know, I understand the rationale. I understand the rationale. But the idea that there is a police genocide, you know, plan to kill black people is just not true. Now, it is sad when anyone has to be killed, when suspects are, you know, apprehended and even shot by police officers. But the fact is that, you know, the stats just don't back up the idea that police killings are targeted to any ethnicity. Really, it's been really a media story that's a non-story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad. Let me say this. The inordinately high rates of crime among urban neighborhoods and black individuals, and, you know, blacks being sometimes the perpetrators, sometimes the victims of crimes, but all ethnicities are. I mean, there are five times more Caucasians than African Americans in the country anyway. But the crimes within the black community and the police interaction and the occasional shootings, it's related to the breakdown of the family more than any concerted plan on the part of police departments to target and profile African Americans. in 2015, there were roughly 1,388 people killed by police. 23% were black, 40% of them white. So over the last 2 years, you know, you're talking about a little under one out of four, and four out of ten, one out of four being black, four out of ten being white. So really, the demographics just don't bear out the assertion that there's an effort to profile and or kill blacks. But the shootings of black people make the news. Now, again, any of this is unfortunate, but the answer is not to undermine the police. I mean, think about this. Most of the law enforcement officers, they put themselves in harm's way for very, you know, for that type of a profession, minimal compensation. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of law enforcement officers, many of them Christian, many of them who make, you know, $28,000 to $40,000 a year for a very, very dangerous and very often thankless job. I mean, so what nobody's really talking about is the need to rebuild the family and to reaffirm morality.
Right, right. Well, this has been around for a while. I look back as far as Jackie Robinson, obviously one of our great heroes, and he said, "I cannot stand and sing the anthem. I cannot salute the flag. I know that I'm a black man in a white world." So it's been around for a while, and it's not going away tomorrow, is it?
No, and I'm a big fan of Jackie Robinson. And the Branch Rickey, who was a Methodist Christian that helped break the color barrier in professional baseball. You know, it's a great story, and from what I understand, Jackie Robinson may have been a Christian himself. You know, I'm in Washington, and we took an after-hours tour of the Capitol the day before yesterday and saw the overwhelmingly Christian presence in the American Revolution and the American founding. And there were, you know, even when the British surrendered there at Yorktown and General Cornwallis and his troops surrendered to Washington and the Continental Army, there were black soldiers that had helped in that. And we saw some of the paintings by John Trumbull that are there in the rotunda of the Capitol. And, you know, it's a terrible thing that there were slave owners. But, by the way, think about this, Bill. You're going to love this. At the Constitutional Convention, when the 56, signers of the Declaration were present, of the 56 signers of the Declaration, two owned slaves, Jefferson and Franklin, the two least Christian. Mm-hmm. Of all the 56 signers. And, you know, we're constantly told by secularists that, you know, if America was so Christian, why was there slavery? And it was terrible. It was terrible that there were slaves. That should not be in a country where all people are viewed as having been created equal, endowed with inalienable rights. But the two that did own slaves of the 56 signers of the Declaration were the two that are often pointed out as being poster children for secularism, Jefferson and Franklin. Now, largely through the efforts of the church, the early founders did condemn slavery, and ultimately slavery was abolished, thank God. But, you know, the answer is not to further try to dismantle the country. Is that our greatest national sin? Well, it's one of them, along with abortion and in our own lifetimes, abandonment of moral truth, the redefinition of marriage, and several other things. But as heinous as it was, and it was bad, and it should never have been, the answer is not to tear down the country, but let's help restore it.
Yeah. Alex, let me take a short break. When I come back, more with Dr. Alex McFarland. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. Be right back. It is 10 minutes till the top of the hour. Dr. Alex McFarland is my guest. A big story in the news about the position the NFL has taken, that players, if they're going to be on the field, must be standing respectfully, and if they don't want to do that, they're free to stay in the locker room. Alex, do you, when you resist authority of other people by ignoring their request, what does it tell you about your concept of God?
That is a great question, Bill. That's a profound question.
I get lucky once in a while.
Great question. To resist authority, what does it say about one's conception of God?
Mm-hmm.
It may reflect lack of knowledge about God, ignorance about God, or it may reflect an assumption that someone doesn't really feel accountable before God. It could imply that someone thinks God doesn't see or doesn't care or can't somehow track what somebody does. But let me say this. Our respect for authority or disregard thereof shows the condition of the heart, really. Because all of us, at some time or another, all of us are going to have to be under an authority that we feel is unjust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the teacher isn't fair.
Right.
The boss gave the promotion to somebody else. You know, sometimes we're the beneficiary of a blessing. Sometimes we're the recipient of a raw deal. I mean, that's just part of life. And I think one of the tests of maturity, and certainly one of the tests of character, is to be a person of integrity, honesty, respect, even in situations that are not fair. You know, I want to say this. John McCain, I'm sorry that he has cancer. I'm grateful that he served our country. But John McCain has really shown, I think, a very poor example of character in the last couple of years. I watched a show about him last Sunday. And again, my wife and I have prayed for John McCain, very sorry that he's ill. But he basically said, I may be old, but I've still got fight in me. And essentially he said, whatever Trump does, I'm going to do the opposite. That's just being punitive. And that's not at all showing leadership. I mean, maybe there are times when in good conscience he feels he should and he could and should stand against the president. But just to say, I'm going to be the resident contrarian merely to show that I've still got fight in me and I like a good scrap, quote unquote, that's standing against authority. And that's not right. I know that we often think about those that would question authority and fight authority are younger people, younger males. You know, remember John Mellencamp had the song "I Fight Authority and Authority Always."
Yeah,
way back the Bobby Fuller Four. I fought the law and the law won.
Right.
Well, whether you're a hot blooded teenager or John McCain trying to stay relevant in the news. I think that God expects us to recognize authority the only time that it's really justified. Now, I'm going to go back to Augustine, and then I'm also going to go to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail, steeped in Christianity. By the way, notice most school systems, moms and dads watch this, that school systems anymore, when they even do recognize Dr. King, they won't put in that he's a preacher. I had a talk with a man 2 days ago who had fought the school system where they live because it's Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And the school would only say Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And he said, yes, but he was a minister and his Christianity informed all that he did with the Southern Christian Leadership Coalition. School system said, well, we're not legally, we can't include that he was a minister, which, of course, is false. But here's the point. We are to follow man's laws as long as they are just laws. Now, how do we know if a law is just or unjust? When the laws of man square with the laws of God, they are just, said Dr. King and Augustine. We have the right and even the duty to civil disobedience only if a law is unjust in light of God's moral law. Well, Colin Kaepernick and the modern progressives, they really don't have any legitimate grounds to say, I'm going to object because things are unjust, because something can only be unjust if there's something objectively just. And in our quest to rationalize abortion and gay marriage, we've said there is no God, there is no objective moral truth. So, can all these people thumb their nose at the national anthem? Sure, but they can't really do it with any legitimacy, legally or spiritually.
Yeah, well, Alex, some great thoughtful analysis. You know, the whole position of authority, who has that place in your life? I guess maybe it's a good question for all of us to ask. If it's not Christ, sure, it's going to be yourself, and that's not going to end well, is it?
Well, in the beginning, God made man in his image, and we've been trying to return the favor ever since. We want to be our own God.
Yeah. Are you traveling this weekend as well, or are you going to be just home with the fam?
I am in D.C., headed home with the fam for 2 days,
okay,
and headed to Pittsburgh to do some TV.
Nice, nice. You had a very interesting day yesterday, going behind-the-scenes look at the Capitol. I did a drive-through and got a McFish sandwich, so we had similar days, just different.
Well, yeah, both are good.
Yeah, all right, Alex. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
God bless
yep,
you. Bye-bye. Thank you, Bill.
Yep. A couple minutes till the top of the hour. We'll wrap up hour one. Thanks to Dr. Alex McFarland. First up in hour two, Welby O'Brien is going to talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, and Chris Martin's going to be later. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.